Welcome to episode 3.5 of The Rink. I'm James Tapeleg Graylian. 0.5 episodes are where we finish off our conversations with the bloggers that we invite onto The Rink. My co-host Tom Luongo and I were talking to John Press of Japers Rink and the NHL Fanhouse, and we pick up where we left off in our previous episode. Tom and I were talking to JP about the poor start that the Capitals had in Atlanta. Yeah, the Atlanta situation was, on paper, it looked pretty bad. I didn't have the opportunity myself to see the game. Was it as bad as it looked on paper?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of it was an embarrassment, I would say. Jose Theodore was not sharp, but he didn't get a lot of help other than, I think, Semin and Mike Green. I think everybody on that team probably should have hung their head after that one. It was not a good effort and not something that they should be proud of. And, I guess the silver lining is that you get one of those stinkers out of the way early in the season. It reminds you that everybody shows, you got to show up every night in the NHL or you're going to get beat by anybody. You can't really take nights off. And maybe they did that. A couple guys were trying to do a little too much, it seemed. And, that was the result.
I'm glad that you brought up Jose Theodore because that's one of the things I definitely wanted to talk to you about.
I knew you would. Yeah.
I commented a bit on your blog, Jasper's Rink. Japers Rink. I don't know why I always call it Jasper. It
that's
just
okay.
Rolls
Everybody,
out.
That's kind of, if I had it all to do over again, I think I'd go with a different name because I can't tell you how many times I see it misspelled around the internet.
See, now I'm embarrassed.
Well, don't be. You're in a,
but I know that once you guys,
club.
Once. Oh,
isn't
yeah.
it, isn't it like once, the hockey blog, them in joke is to mispronounce Japers Rink? Isn't that the way it's everybody should do it at least once publicly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not necessarily a great thing to be known for, but at least people are talking about it, right?
Right.
Yeah. All press is a good press.
Well, I know that I commented some over there on your blog about Jose Theodore and when he got signed, and I know and I remember that there was the initial shock of doom and gloom. Especially considering it wasn't that long before, the memory was still fresh of his breakdown in the second round of the playoffs against Detroit and getting shut out, getting pulled a couple times. How's the attitude now? Now that everybody's kind of had a chance to step back a little bit and take a look? I know that there was some calming, but also then again you had this situation in Atlanta. And so what seems to be the prevailing attitude at this point, and how do you feel about things?
I don't know that much has changed. I think that some people were kind of predisposed to not give him a chance. Some people were predisposed to give him a chance. And whichever camp you're in, I think right now you kind of see something that supports what your position on it. He had a very bad first night here. He wasn't very good in the preseason at all. Then Saturday night, he got off to a rough start, gave up a goal 26 seconds in, and then gave up another goal that was probably questionable. But he settled down after that. He got his save percentage up over 900 for the game. And, I think that it's... It's going to be interesting to watch. I think my whole point on Theodore is that he doesn't have to be great. This isn't a team that's going to need him to be great. In part, you look at what they did from Thanksgiving last year until they acquired Cristobal Oue, and they racked up wins, and that was with a goalie who wasn't performing well at all in Kolzig. And... they don't need a goalie to go out there and win 2-1 games. I mean, they need him to be good enough. I think he's proven for long stretches of time during his career that he can be good enough. He's had stretches where he wasn't good enough, obviously. but last year he, for the most part, was. And to me, the greater point that people don't consider in considering how he may or may not work out in D.C. is the defense in front of him. And people like to knock the Caps defense, but as a team, they're a team that doesn't give up a lot of shots typically. I mean, they gave up 10 tonight.
And only three in the first two periods.
Right. They don't give up shots from great scoring positions either. I don't know if you guys read Alan Ryder's work over at Hockey Analytics, but, you know, he's done a lot in terms of isolating positions and, you know, figuring out which team gets contributions from his goalies and which isn't getting contributions from his goalies. And it turns out that the Caps last year got the worst contribution from their goalie in the Eastern Conference. I think it might have been the entire league. Maybe Tampa was worse. But the Caps, what his numbers were showing is that the Caps just don't give up a lot of shots on goal, and they don't give up shots from tough scoring positions. And if they had a halfway decent netminder for most of last year, they would have been a heck of a lot better off than they were. And, you know, I think that Cristobal Ua, once he got to town, really benefited from that. And I don't think he's as good a goaltender as his numbers the last 13 games of the season last year were. I think he was 12-1 with just a minuscule goals against average. He was definitely hot, but, you know, I think the defense can make Jose Theodore look good too. And once he settles into the comfort zone, I mean, these are still goalie learning his defensemen learning their goalie, and Jose Theodore is also a right-handed catching goalie, which is a little goofy for these defensemen who haven't played with one. So I think give it time, and I'm optimistic that it can work. You know, I'm under no misconceptions about him walking in here and winning a Vezina or anything, but you know, I think he can be a perfectly adequate goaltender for this team.
What about Johnson's not exactly going to be challenging for the number one position, though.
No, I think Johnny's a good backup. He's a very solid number two guy who can take over and start a few games in a row if you need it, but I think that it's a pretty clear number one and number two situation.
Yeah, it effectively what you're saying is, you know, all he has to be is Grant Fuhr with the team in front of him. And if you look at what they
without
did to the Canucks,
drug abuse.
Yeah, without, you know, the drug abuse and the flopping around and the flopping around and everything else. Right. Watching those old Oilers games, it's just painful that, you know.
Yeah.
Worst goaltender to own four Stanley Cups. And if you watch the game tonight in Vancouver, you saw quite clearly that they don't give up a lot of shots from they didn't give Vancouver anything in the middle of the ice. Mm-hmm. And they just play a very efficient zone defense, and you know, they get in the shot lanes and they block shots and keep stuff away from their goaltender, because, you know, they haven't had solid goaltending for so long that it's, you know, that's the system you put in place when you don't have solid goaltending, is, you know, you play a very kind of a passive zone. They're a very quick team too, so they have got really good puck pursuit. So you just hound guys and work harder than them. If you outwork them, you'll eventually get the puck back, and you know, you don't have to have a good goaltender if you're playing in the offensive end of the ice.
And that's the other thing with the forwards they have, that they want to play a real puck control offense. And with guys like Nylander, Backstrom, and even the checking line, these guys cycle the puck well, and they'll keep the puck at the other end for long stretches.
Right.
It's kind of funny that you were talking about that you guys were mentioning not having good goaltending for so long, when it seemed like the face of the franchise in a way was Olli the goalie.
Sure.
Yeah. It. What about Olli the goalie, and why was he such the face of the franchise for so long if the goaltending was as mediocre as people talk about?
Well, I mean, I don't know that I would say that it was as mediocre up until last year. I mean, 2 years ago, I think Olli had a .910 save percentage on a terrible team. So he got old fast, I think. I don't know exactly what happened here, but all of a sudden last season, his rebound control got really, really bad, and he was getting burned. And it just, part of it, I think, he was very close with Glenn Hamlin when Hamlin was here. And Hamlin, you know, Hamlin was a former goalie. Hamlin kind of protected Ole. He protected the goalies, and, you know, he put in these systems where, you know, the team had no chance of scoring goals, but, you know, you weren't giving up goals. You know, you weren't forechecking. You weren't doing the things that create turnovers. It was a very conservative system for Glenn, under Glenn Hamlin. And, you know, he obviously was a former goaltender. That was a guy that Ole was close to. Then they bring in Boudreau, who Ole famously called out at one point during the season last year, saying that he doesn't understand the position of goaltender. And the relationship just didn't seem very, very good. And things just didn't end quite the way that you would have liked to. But, I mean, without question, Ole was the face of this franchise for a long, long time. And
he's seen a lot of rubber in his career. And, you know, there comes a point where, you know, at some point, it's, you know, the wheels are just going to fall off. It's almost like Dick Clark, you know. He's the same for 40 years, and then all of a sudden, that's it.
Yeah, okay. And it's really curious. I'm really not sure why he decided to sign up for this rebuilding stuff in Tampa Bay, and with that defense that he's got in front of him there. I know that the competitive fire still burns, and he wants nothing more than to prove this franchise wrong, but. I mean, I don't see that he's really set himself up for a lot of success there, but I could be wrong.
I don't think you're going to be wrong in that at all, but it had to be kind of strange because he left in a very odd way. It seemed like he was going to retire and then signed with somebody else. And then, of course, UA kind of strung the caps along, possibly to jack up his price to go somewhere else. Do you feel like you've been burned as a Caps fan by these goalie departures at all?
Not by Kolzig. I mean, Kolzig, you know, you kind of saw that one coming for a little while. Once they went to UA and Ole stopped talking to the media, and he, after the final game against the Flyers, took his nameplate down and left without talking to anyone, and that was or wasn't a controversy, depending on who you talk to. And there was a lot of he said, she said stuff going on in terms of how he actually left town and everything. So you knew that was kind of coming. But UA the whole time was saying how much he wanted to stay, loved the town, this, that, and the other thing. And then, you know, he just goes and signs for the dollars, and you can't blame a guy of his age probably getting his last big payday. So he's going for it. And, you know, it's a bit of a burn in that he the whole time was saying he wanted to stay, and the Caps met his contract demands, and then he got a better offer, so he had new demands. That's kind of it. So, yeah, that's a burn a little bit. But I don't think he's as good a goaltender probably as some people might think he is.
He's kind of showing that a little bit in Chicago right now. But they have – I think they have plenty of goalie woes. One day we're going to get a Blackhawks blogger on, and I'm sure it's going to be about – you know, an hour worth of goalie talk.
Yeah, I don't know how you spend that much money on a goalie when you have a $6 million goalie already on the books. I mean, I guess maybe they thought that they'd be able to move him, but Javi Bulin, that is. But, you know, now they've got, what, about $11.5 million tied up in one and a half goalies or two goalies or whatever they've got there. So that was kind of weird. But, yeah, with UA, it's a bit of a burn in that you feel that George McPhee kind of rescued this guy. He took him for a second-round pick from Montreal where he clearly wasn't in their plans at all. He wasn't going to play the rest of the way. I wonder if they would have liked to have him go to in the playoffs rather than Halak when they had to when Price was stumbling. But I think that you feel that McPhee saved him and gave him every opportunity, and this is how he repays it, you know. It was a little lack of loyalty and...
Do the Blackhawks play in Washington this year?
They were just here Saturday night, and Bobby Bullen started.
And that's it for the year, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. They were, they had it was the home opener, and they had the banner raising. It was nice, I guess, that UA was here to see us raise the banner. But and I'm sure 26 seconds into the game when Theodore let up a softie, I'm sure UA was laughing to himself on the bench, but, you know, they probably moved past it a lot quicker than the fans and the bloggers have.
Right. The fans never let anything go.
No.
Well, especially not one in 26 seconds. It's unfortunately kind of smacks of the start that that Gerber and Ottawa had. Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of nerves. I've noticed a lot of early game nerves so far in a lot of the games I've seen so far this year. I'm just not. I just won't even. I don't even want to comment on or analyze them. It's nerves. It's the home opener. It's whatever. It's everybody's just ready to get back. And I've seen some of the most horrific goals imaginable and some of the most horrific coverage imaginable. You got to wait until the first couple, the first couple of weeks are over. I'm not going to be impressed with the Rangers until they go on a 5-game winning streak in November or a 7-game winning streak in November, because it's easy to get out of the gate fast when everybody else is still floundering around.
Sure, but these points count,
I'm not arguing that. I mean, Buffalo got off to a 14 or 11 games win streak to start 2006-2007. I understand it, but still, you have to be impressed when the games really start to tighten, when the teams really start to tighten up. But
you got to. I mean, I'm impressed that with the teams that can get it going from the drop of that first puck, because you look at the Caps. If Carolina had won one more game in October last year, they would have won the division. And it wouldn't have been the Caps.
Well,
so,
Carolina ain't winning much this year, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, we'll see. It's a long year, but I'm not sold on them either.
Yeah.
How's turnout at the rink so far? It's only been a couple of games. I mean, what are season ticket sales like? Is this looking at the success from last year, is this a fan base that seems fired up about the Capitals?
Yeah, without question, they have really energized it. I think they've kind of moved themselves into the number two spot in this market, behind the almighty Redskins, of course, who will never be unseated, no matter how embarrassing they are. The run last year got everybody excited. Ovechkin gets everybody excited, and they had a ton of season ticket renewals and new season ticket orders, and I think they're at about 11,000 season tickets now, about an 18,277 capacity. So they're going to do pretty well, I think. But I think it's important to get off to a good start and keep everybody engaged, because if they go through a rough October, a rough November or something, these people, a lot of people that tuned back in last spring might tune back out and wait for spring to roll around, or who knows. So I think they've done a lot. Everyone's excited now, but to keep it going, bottom line in this town is you got to win, because there are a lot of other options out there. So if you're not winning, you're not going to keep the fan base.
Well, it seems like they have the most fun marketing department I've ever seen for a hockey team. You've got segues and roller coasters for the players. They're doing rock videos. It seems like a really fun team right now.
Yeah, I think you can get away with that stuff when you're winning. I think it'd look pretty foolish if they're riding roller coasters and finishing 14th in the conference or something. But they're having fun. It's a tight group of guys, without question, and they're energized. The fan base is energized. Now it's just about winning, like everywhere else. How many teams in the entire league can keep their fans through the ups and downs? Maybe 6, 7, 8. I think most teams face a little bit of a drop off if they're not competitive, if they're not winning games. So
if they're not the Toronto Maple Leafs,
right? I mean, there are some Red Wings and other teams out there, but for a lot of teams, it's all about winning and putting good product on the ice. And right now the Caps have a good product to sell, so that hopefully keeps going.
Well, you guys have a pretty darn good salesman of an owner, and he's been letting the bloggers into the press box. Mm-hmm. You've been in the press box quite a bit yourself, haven't you? Mm-hmm. What's the atmosphere like for that? What's the experience been like?
It's cool. It's something different. It's obviously not my job. It's not my everyday experience. So it's really great how this team's engaged the bloggers and kind of embraced it. And it does speak to how forward-thinking an owner Ted Leonsis is. And it's not just with giving access to bloggers, but I mean, this team is, has a YouTube page, and they Twitter their media announcements, and all these other things that are just kind of at the technological forefront, which is another way they keep the fan base engaged and the younger, more tech-savvy fans, and keeps the media involved. And I think that the blogging, bringing the bloggers in, has been another good outlet, for the team to get kind of their message out and to get a little more coverage in a town that isn't a big media market for hockey. They still have some struggles getting inches in the local newspapers, and I don't think that's necessarily the fault of the guys, the beat writers for the team, because I think they do a pretty good job. But when the team isn't getting as much coverage as it wants in the papers, they've gone elsewhere and they get stuff from new media, as it were. And a lot of times that's good stuff that they get. Sometimes more favorable or more inclined to get the team's message out.
How has the reaction been from the mainstream media guys in the press box? Has it been okay?
It's been great. As far as I'm concerned, it's been great. I get along really well with Tarek and Corey, who are the two beat writers for the Post and the Times, respectively. And they seem to they seem fine with it. I think it's pushed them a little bit. When I started doing this, it was actually during the lockout, and it was like me and Eric McElwain, and obviously Eric been doing it since Christ was in diapers, but I at that time when I came along and when I started doing it, there was the big advantage that someone like me was that the newspaper would come out in the morning, and anything that happened during the day, you wouldn't get in the newspaper till the next day. But bloggers could just write about it as news breaks, basically. So I think that dynamic kind of pushed, and now the local guys, you know, all over the place have their own blogs, which is great because they know they can't wait till the next morning to get news out either. So, you know, I think in general, the more voices there are out there and the more media outlets there are, the better. The more sources for this information, the better for the fans and, you know, for the team, for everyone.
Yeah, it's an interesting issue in that the media is changing quickly and it's becoming a more instant access process. And, you know, for Ted Leonsis to see it early on that this is where information retrieval was going, for lack of a better term, that people were going to get their information as quickly as possible off the internet. And that the, you know, he understood better than anybody that this was the wave of the future, and that, you know, we call it the dead tree media for a reason. And every time I think about this stuff, I think back to a friend of mine who always said, "Why would I pay 50 cents for yesterday's news when I can get today's news for free?" And moreover, you know, if you've got a vibrant blogging community who are fans and who are interested and you know, effectively want to do your job for you, why wouldn't you leverage them? It makes no sense not to.
No, I mean, he's really right there. And, you know, I think some in the blogging community see it as more media, and some probably outside the blogging community see it as public relations and almost ad buys for the team because of the way that some blogs might cover things. But you know, I think it's probably a combination of the two when you're giving the bloggers this access. You know, it's free advertising in some ways, and it's you know, increased dissemination of information.
Ultimately, I think all that's really done is has dropped the illusion that there was objectivity and/or separation and all of these things. That's my take on a lot of this stuff, is that there was always the illusion that our media is not, you know, being driven by those who create the news. You know, obviously at the national political level, it's obviously that way. And at the sports level, it's obvious. It's almost exclusively that way. So, you know, it's just strip the illusion away and take it for what it is. And if somebody's wearing their fandom on their sleeve while they report the news, well, then so be it. You at least know it's what it is. And
well, I mean, you move on. That's the thing, you know, these sports writers, you know, they're going to sell more copy, or, you know, whatever the 21st century version of that idiom is. If they've got, if they're covering a good team that's interesting, that people are interested in, you know?
Right.
And so it's in their best interest to make for the team to be good and to portray a story that people want to follow. You know, and you're talking about the national political stage, obviously, you know, it's the same thing. They want to see tight races and they want to keep things close. And so no matter what the media is, you know, they want to, they have a vested interest in what they're covering and making it as interesting to their consumers as possible. So I think that, you know, I think that this hockey coverage is the same way with whether it's the mainstream or the bloggers, you know.
Right.
Now you have you've been in, I don't want to put you too much on the spot, but do you have any interesting weird stories from the press box that you can share?
Let me think.
Anybody get into shouting matches? Anybody fall down that shouldn't have? Anything weird like that?
No, you know, it's been pretty tame and very professional from what I've seen. You know, and that's part of the other, that's part of the concern, I guess, about putting bloggers up there and letting them in the locker room, is because there's an assumption for some reason that these bloggers, they might just, since their livelihood isn't necessarily tied to their coverage of this game, that they might not observe sort of the same rules of decorum that are generally accepted amongst the media, you know what I'm saying?
The professionalism.
Right. And that, you know, they might report something that they see that the other guys wouldn't necessarily report. But, you know, I haven't really seen that. I mean, I know I've seen or heard a couple things that wouldn't necessarily be appropriate to put on my blog. And, you know, I think I've exercised the discretion that that anybody would in a similar position. But, you know, I guess you never know.
It's kind of funny. I've heard I've heard a few people talk about other general managers or other teams and their organizations and wanting to control the message. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, here you are saying, "Well, I'm controlling my own message on my own terms." Do you ever feel like it seems like Ted would be the kind of person as an owner and as somebody who's letting the bloggers in that wouldn't be as interested in controlling the message? Do you ever find that? Do you ever run into anybody that tries to control what you put out?
No, I've never been contacted. I've heard another blog say that they ran something and they were pretty soon thereafter contacted by a team asking to remove it, and it was something that was in. It was a matter of public record, and I thought that was a little weird that they would ask for that, but they did. But I think that, you know, Ted is certainly someone who appreciates fair criticism, if it's there and if it's fair. And, you know, that's what you get. This is, you know, a team also that has a very vibrant fan message board, you know, run through the site. And, you know, Ted told me once about having this message board. It's like giving your enemy the gun and the bullets to shoot you with, because it's, you know, these things,
oh, yeah.
they devolve into, there are some very intelligent things posted on there, and there's some not very intelligent things posted on there, you know, but that's the nature of the internet. So,
right.
That's the nature of forums. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think that, you know, if you're fair and, if you're smart and come with, valid criticism, I don't think that, at least this team, I don't think there's anyone there that's going to have a problem with it.
That's good to hear.
I could be wrong. I could just be in the tank, you know.
Nobody's talking to you. We're talking to the wrong guy.
Nah, I could just be drinking the Kool-Aid. But
how many games a year are you in the press box at this point?
I don't know, probably 5 to 10. I have about half the games season tickets, so I typically prefer going as a fan. I like going, having a beer, and watching the game from my seats and not being in the press box. But, you know, it's a good thing a few times a year, and there are a few games I usually will pick out as ones that I would be particularly interested in getting that perspective on. But for most games, I like to sit downstairs and have a couple beers and mix with the unruly masses.
Now, Tom and I have talked a little bit about this and with other bloggers that the job or the writing has changed when it became kind of a job or popular or like. And have you found at all that your writing changed when you went into the press box?
No. You know, I think I've always written kind of the same way. The place my writing changes, because I also, like Tom, I write over at Fan House for AOL. I think my writing changes when I'm writing there.
Yeah. Versus,
I think I, you know, even subconsciously sometimes just try to take a little more professional tone and don't use some of the, you know, colloquialisms. And I just am not as my voice writing there isn't as natural, I think, as it is on my own blog. But I don't find that my writing style has changed given the access at my site, I don't think.
Right. I found what I found is I couldn't do both after a while. I couldn't maintain. I preferred to write the saber rattling. It was terrible. And then but I couldn't do both. You all know why I couldn't stay on. So, you know, when I came back to Bandhouse, I almost made the conscious effort to, when I'm writing about my team, I'm just going to write in the same mode that I did before. And if Bandhouse doesn't like it, then, you know, they can let me know. Right. And we'll just go from there. So yeah. I'm hoping to try and recapture that.
Yeah, not to get too meta or anything, but I think that's, like, one of the big things with blogging generally. I mean, I'm sure you guys have felt the burnout, and, you know, when it starts feeling more like a job or more like a responsibility than an outlet or a release, and when you're not really writing for yourself, and, you know, you just got to step back and kind of reassess where you're at, and, you know, so I think it's absolutely crucial to keep your own voice in this thing and keep it you know, comfortable and natural, and, you know, otherwise, right. I just don't see how it can work. I mean, I've been doing this for over 3 years now, and, you know, if I had a nickel for every time I thought about just dropping it, I could buy us all beers one night at the game. But you know, if you just keep doing it for the right reasons, then, you know, it's all right.
Well, I know Tom's favorite question is the easiest question when we start talking about bloggers in there and their blogs. So you've been doing it for over 3 years now, I think Tom's favorite question is usually why.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I started doing it. I actually started writing when I was studying for the Maryland State Bar Exam because I just couldn't study anymore and it was driving me nuts. So I started writing about hockey just because I didn't necessarily feel that I had anything anybody wanted to hear, but I felt like I had something I wanted to say. And, you know, it's just kind of, it's kind of kept me interested, and really I've got this little niche corner of the internet or something with a few people who read me every day and who comment, and they really make it worthwhile. It's a discussion about something I'm incredibly passionate about, which is the Caps. And, you know, I guess why I keep doing it is just to keep that discussion going, because I think it's still an interesting discussion. And, you know, I guess there are other people that would keep the discussion going too, and they do in other places. But I don't know, there's something about kind of maybe controlling the dialogue a little bit and directing it the way I want it directed, and, you know, seeing some of the things I want to see, and maybe even pushing some other folks to do their thing. Just keeps it interesting. It's, you know, as soon as it gets, like I said, as soon as it gets to be a job, that's when I back off and say that's it, you know.
Right.
Did you also have a huge link listing on your blog, mm-hmm. Of bloggers, of news sites, of teams? That must have taken forever to do.
Yeah, well, my buddy Ken, who is a co-contributor on the Rink, he kind of headmanned that project, and it was more or less his idea, and I said, if you want to do it, cool, run with it, get the link. You know, it's on you, but it's huge, and it's pretty accessible, too. I mean, I don't know that it's been, I think it probably needs a once over, yeah, it's enormous.
That once over could take a very long time.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have to do it in sections. What I really need is an intern. I need to get a rink intern.
that's do you earn college credit doing that?
Yeah, you know, I saw Kevin Barry Melrose Rocks was out there, Horn himself putting his resume out there looking for an internship. Maybe I can get an internship.
That's awesome.
Double blogging, as it was.
Yeah. Oh. It's gotten really meta now that you need an intern to run your own blog. That's
2 degrees of separation from your own blog. That's kind of strange.
Yeah, no, that would not be okay. You know, I get a little uneasy seeing when people take themselves a little too seriously about some of this stuff. So I certainly try not to.
And then, of course, you're also over on AOL Fanhouse, mm-hmm. and you've been there pretty much since they started the NHL Fanhouse side, right?
Yeah.
How did that all come about? Was it just, with you on there, and of course Eric Mackerlin is on there. So essentially, there's two Capitals bloggers in a way.
Yeah, I mean, Eric brought me along, brought Tom along right at the outset when he started it, and it was. I mean, you look at the blogging talent that Fanhouse had about. A little more than a year ago or something, when it was like, it was Eric and it was Myrtle and it was Wyszynski and then there's Jess and Tom and then further down there's me and everything. But I mean, just the guys at the top end of that, it's like, you know, it's almost like the holy trinity of hockey blogging in Myrtle, Wyszynski, and Mackerlin, right? They brought me along, and I was able to do it for a while, but, unfortunately, I slowed down over there. Just there aren't enough minutes in the day anymore for me to devote as much time to that as I would like to. But
Well, and you're still pretty prolific on your own blog. And yeah. Some days it seems like you put up 5 posts in a day, and maybe that's a bit, maybe
keep telling people that. No, that's great.
So come on by, folks.
Yeah.
We got all the posts you need.
Yeah. I do what I can. Some days I can do a little more than other days, and some days not as much. It all depends on work. It depends on other stuff. My wife and I had our first baby back in January, and, he's just the greatest thing in the world, but it takes up a lot of time, too.
So. Those babies don't take any time at all. What are you talking about?
No. I mean, he's 8.5 months now, and he's, he's changing his own diaper. He's fixing his own food. He's,
speaking Latin.
He doesn't take any time at all. No, but, I still try to find time to do it all. I mean, it's still, for me right now, back to the question of why I keep doing it, blogging is still that kind of relief and that outlet for a lot of things. So, yeah, I'll keep at it.
Well, good. You kind of had to redesign.
Wouldn't that be something like... And here I am on the Rink podcast to announce that I'm quitting. I'm done.
Oh, yeah, that'd be outstanding. we really need that kind of scoop.
Breaking blogger news. No, we don't need
good.
That.
It'd be like when McCain announced his presidency on Leno or whatever.
Actually, I'm hoping that you get the Rink podcast bump, and that would be that's what I'm hoping for. Kind of like the Jon Stewart bump.
Yeah, I'm looking for it. I could use the bump.
that's not going to happen. We're actually hoping for the Japers rink bump. I think it's the other.
Yeah, well, I think it's working the other way.
It's really the other way around.
Yeah, because my readers aren't sick enough of me. They're going to listen to me now. I'm not verbose enough on the blog. They got to get the audio version of it. We'll send them your way, and they'll listen.
On your blog, you have a lot of commenters. I so many bloggers talk about how hard it is sometimes to get mm-hmm. the audience, you know, the readership linked into the blog and commenting and getting involved. Do you do anything special? Do you do anything interesting, or do you? Some people find that the comments are just a place for the readers to have their say and never respond back. What are your attitudes towards that?
I love comments, you know, even the stupid ones, you know, and I get my fair share of those. It's like I'm just a big proponent of kind of the marketplace of ideas and throw it all out there, and everybody can say what they want to say, and you know, it's great. I'm often amazed at how many comments I'll get on some of these things. So it's great, and it's really kind of what keeps you going at this, you know, because otherwise you're just kind of doing the soliloquy out there, and that's a little weird. But I love the comments. I wish I get more of them, but, you know, I'll take every one I can get and try to respond where I need to, and I like stoking a discussion and having people take it. You know, I just like throwing stuff out there and having them run with it and go back and forth. And you know, I don't edit comments, and I very, very rarely will delete anything anybody writes unless it's, you know, a direct attack on someone else or some other similarly trolling garbage. But I just like to turn them loose, turn my boys loose and girls. I think I have a couple girls on there. Yeah.
What about the rest of the hockey blogging community in Washington? It's a pretty good community there.
Yeah, we got a lot. I mean, that's obviously part of that is the teams embracing and encouraging bloggers. But we've got a lot. I mean, Eric still down there in the press box and down into the locker room on most home games, or he has someone there on Frozen Blogs doing their thing. Peerless Prognosticator is one of my absolute favorites. If you guys check him out, he's got a good sense of humor and does a great job. And you know, there are tons more you know, that are really kind of providing content, but there's not as much overlap as you'd think. You know, everybody kind of has their voice and does their thing, and you know, I don't think that too much of it is really redundant somehow. I think that speaks to the quality of them, and you know, there's always room for more. That's what I always say. You know, so, yeah, there's always room on the internet for more voices.
Well, and people finding their niche always pushes you just a little bit harder as well. It's what I used to find is yeah. every time another Sabres blogger showed up, it made me, you know, reassess what I was doing and, you know, how well I was covering things, and should I be doing that, or can I do that well, or do I even care, or no, they do that too well that I know I don't want to do that.
Right. Right.
You know,
there's definitely a lot of that. And I mean, I just find myself a while ago, it'd be like, I'd stumble upon a story. I'd be like, oh, write about that and post it in the morning. And now I'm like, shoot, if I don't post that tonight, somebody else is going to get to it. And, before I get a chance to. So everybody, I think, probably pushes everybody a little bit. And, the big winners are the readers.
Right. Exactly. Which is the best part.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, you talk about everybody in the Capitals blogosphere having their own voice. Have you ever can you define your own voice? Read like
that? I don't on my blog. That's a funny thing.
I was going to ask if you read like you are, you know, as a person.
Yeah, I think I do. I think I try to do a little bit of maybe a little bit of everything. You know, I try to do a decent amount of statistical analysis, but I don't. I try not to get too dense on it because I know it's not for everybody. And, you know, I try to keep it light and I try to not take myself too seriously and kind of have fun with it. That's it. I want my readers to have fun reading it. And I want it to, you know, a smattering of pop culture references here and there and just not be too heavy and be fairly easily digestible. And basically the voice I want to have is one that's encouraging this discussion, and not, you know, some blogs that have a tone that's a little that can come across maybe as condescending or lecturing. That's certainly not where I want to be. I want to be part of the discussion. You know, I'm not talking to my readers, I'm talking with them. That's probably the soundbitey version.
It's a good attitude to have, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it works. I hope so.
Well, John, you're on Japers Rink. Yep. I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yep.
Japers Rink.
Japers Rink.
All right. And, of course, NHL Fan House.
Yep.
For AOL.
Yep.
Is there any other stuff that you're doing hockey-wise right now?
No, struggling through a season on my PS3 of the new game, but that's pretty much it.
Is it entertaining? Are you enjoying it?
It is. It's fun. I've always been kind of a video game guy. Another thing I'm doing is trying to whoop on everybody in Myrtle's Blogger Fantasy League. So that's kind of my other big passion is fantasy hockey. It's like hockey's the passion, and then they're like sub-passions. And fantasy and reality and I don't know what else, but yeah.
They all kind of spring off of the hockey.
Yeah. Everything to do with hockey, you know, if it's got something to do with hockey, I probably am interested and involved.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you coming on.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime.
Yeah, John, it was a lot of fun, man, and you take care and you have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
And we're going to do it again, I promise you.
I'll hold you to it.
Better.
All right, take care, guys.
Take care.
Thank you. Later. Well, thanks for listening to episode 3.5 of The Rink. Our thanks to our guest, John Press. You can find his work at japersrink.blogspot.com and at nhl.fanhouse.com, where you can also find my co-host, Tom Luongo's work. My blog is at jerseysandhockeylove.com, and you can find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com. You can send us an email at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you next week on The Rink.